Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, September the 10th, the day before 9/11, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Today we're going to be chatting with our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. We'll be talking about the DOJ, the Biden administration, the Department of Justice, going after Texas on two fronts, on the abortion law, and they're also appealing the ruling by the Texas court regarding DACA. So they've got those two legal fronts forming. We'll talk about President Biden's speech, the vaccine speech, and some of the contradictions in it. And then, of course, we'll say a word or two about 9/11. So let me say hello to my friend George. How are you, George?
Real well. How are you doing, man?
Just doing great. You know, incredible. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that it was 20 years ago, but it was 20 years ago. That 9/11 happened, how much our world changed in just one morning. And I'd like you to share one memory of 9/11, and I'll do the same. So you just share, you know, just a quick memory from 9/11.
Quick memory from 9/11. I guess the best one is just the incredible picture of watching on TV the second plane hit. The first plane, everyone continued to think it was, you know, an accident, as harsh as they thought. But then sitting there watching the second plane hit the tower really, really was something very, very frightening. And I remember the feeling. I mean, the feeling was one of fear, one of incredulity. It was, you know, you were just in shock,
right?
And then calling family members and telling them everything was fine, and then slowly watching things begin to unravel, and all the planes being told that they could not leave,
right.
Everything being grounded. Then the third plane hitting the Pentagon,
right.
And then another one falling in Pennsylvania. It was very, very. I mean, it all happened within the space of less than an hour, and it just left us so shaken.
Right.
So shaken. Left me very, very shaken.
Yeah.
Talking to my family, talking to friends, you know, I remember getting home and hearing folks talk about how that morning they had, hugged their family members, a family member for the last time, and it was just, I mean, it changed America. It changed us all very,
right.
Very much.
Yes, I agree. I agree. A couple of things. Watching the plane hit the tower was, and I saw that on TV. I was actually putting my tie on, and I saw that on TV. I think a couple of things quickly about my memories. Watching people jump from the building, that image of man jumping from the building, how desperate must one be with, I guess if you stay behind, you're going to burn to death. If you jump from the building, well, we know that happens. And so that image of that man and that photo, I guess they were showing that photo earlier today, that just leaves you, you know, you just, I mean, it was just amazing to think of that. of that photo. The other really interesting thing for me was a couple of days later, there were no planes in the air. And that was so spooky because here in the Dallas area, we have a very busy airport. And obviously, you know, it's very common at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night as it starts getting dark. You know, you see this long line of planes, you know, being, you know, getting ready to land at DFW. And you could look up, I mean, if you look to the north, look out the window and just look north, and you always see this little line of, you know, little lights, you know, they're planes, you know, getting ready to land at DFW or lining up to land at DFW. And not seeing that for weeks was really spooky. It was like all of a sudden, wow, there are no planes in the air. Because, like you were saying, everything was grounded. And yes, you're right about family. That was the first thought in my mind is, you know, how was my family? How was my mom? How was my dad? Thankfully, none of us were near any of the areas where all of this happened. But I do know, I do have a friend who had a friend who worked there. And I don't remember if the friend was killed or he was able to get out, but he was very concerned about his friend. So 9/11. Now let me ask you another question, George. About 9/11. I have a post that came out this morning at the American Thinker saying, "Stay away, Joe." That's the title of the memo, and where I'm basically saying that I don't think President Biden should go to the celebration. Not this year. Maybe next year. But not this year, because I just think that he has done so much damage to this day, the way things happened in Afghanistan. And I don't know how he looks at the family or how he stands there. You know, on one side, you've got Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, standing one part of the screen. And on the other part of the screen, you've got the Taliban celebrating the victory they never had against the United States. I don't know how the president does it. Honestly, I wish he would stay home, George.
Yeah. I know that they announced this morning, trying to put the best spin on it, that he is not going to attend any event, any 9/11 event, that he is going to release a video memo, a video commemorating the event, but he himself is not going to attend any event.
Hmm.
I find that to be both not surprising and appropriate, while at the same time very disappointing and disgusting.
Yeah, well, I think the whole Afghanistan experience is disgusting to anybody who remembers 9/11 and who remembers the patriotism of all these young men who went over there to fight. I mean, so many young men were inspired to wear the uniform because of 9/11. And I think a lot of them must be feeling terrible, especially obviously the families of the fallen, but also the ones who came back injured. I mean, it just got to be a terrible feeling to be a family member of any serviceman any soldier, male or female, who served in Afghanistan. Well, let's get into some of the current stuff, George. As you probably know, the Department of Justice is suing the state of Texas over the abortion law, but they're also going a step further. They're also going to appeal the judge's decision on DACA. Why don't we talk about the abortion law first and your reaction to the Department of Justice, and what exactly is their argument going to be, George? Because this is not, abortion has not been eliminated in Texas, and who are they going to sue, 30 million Texans? Who could potentially sue a doctor? This is a very unique case that was written here, and I'm not exactly sure how they're going to make their case, George.
It shows, in my opinion, it shows that these folks, these Democrats, particularly the Biden administration, does not understand the Constitution of the United States. The name of the name of the nation is United States for a reason, and the state of Texas, the sovereign state of Texas, has duly elected representatives who in turn passed laws, including a law limiting abortions, not abolishing them, but limiting them. And in doing so, that was the will of the people of the state of Texas. The argument that they're going to make is what? I'm not exactly sure that that somehow that limits the ability of a woman to have an abortion. Well, yes, it does, but it doesn't take away that ability. That woman can leave the state and get an abortion, I believe, at any time without any kind of restrictions in the state of California and in the state of New York and in the state of Maryland. They can easily do that. I mean, it is just amazing that these folks want to force sovereign states, citizens of sovereign states, to do their will. And again, it shows the complete lack of understanding of the Constitution, but in my opinion, it goes even further. It shows their willfulness. It shows their tyrannical streak, mm-hmm. that they want their will imposed on people,
yeah.
rather than to let the will of the people determine what they want.
Now, one of the reasons I would like to believe this, maybe I'm wrong, but one of the reasons that I believe that the Supreme Court did not take up the Texas case a couple of weeks ago is because there are five judges or five justices in the Supreme Court who actually agree with what you just said, that Texas, through its legislature and the process here, can regulate abortion. I really believe that. I could be dead wrong, but I believe that. I think what they're saying is, look, this is a regulation that was brought to you by the people of Texas through their legislature. And the people of Texas have the right to regulate abortion. And we'll see where the Supreme Court stands, I guess, in about a year when they have to write an opinion about the Mississippi case, which that particular case makes it illegal to have an abortion after 15 weeks. So we'll see.
Well, and I think that if the court is going to look at it that way, it has the potential to unravel the universal application, the national application of Roe v. Wade. That's what they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
It also has the potential of unraveling a few others, like gay marriage. The state of California has a famous case that came about in the late 1980s, early 1990s, where the state of California had an election, a referendum, and the majority of the state of California voted to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, only to have it slapped down by the state of California courts, and eventually upheld by the Supreme Court. Well, again, I think that has that this ruling would have an impact on that, because what about the will of the people?
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right. No, exactly. And I hope that's what the court is saying, and not taking up taking up the Texas case. I hope what they're saying is, look, they have the right to do this. If you disagree with it, win elections and change it within Texas, the Texas legislature. But don't expect us, meaning the Supreme Court, to do what you cannot do through the will of the people. I think that's what they were saying. I certainly hope so. Because if I'm right, then I think there's a very good chance that the Supreme Court next...
The court cannot create a law, nor can they legislate. That's
exactly. Absolutely. You're 100% correct. And I'm hoping, George, is that this is at least five justices in the court are tipping their hand And they're saying it's okay for Texas to do this. And if that's what it is, I don't know that, but if that's what it is, then I think what that's telling me is that they're willing to consider the Mississippi ban of 15 weeks in June of next year. And that, to me, at least for the moment, would settle this, I hope. You would say, okay, you've got 15 weeks to have an abortion or heartbeat here in Texas, but let every state figure that out. And then every state can figure out how it will regulate abortion based on what the people of that state want, which is what Texas did. I mean, what we got in Texas is the product of the elections. This is what these candidates ran for office promising this. And they gave us what they promised, George.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, again, I'm not sure exactly what is the problem. What is the problem with the state of Texas electing somebody, electing a legislature with the majority of the voters electing a legislature, a state legislature that wants X.
Right.
And somebody in another state being upset and wanting because they don't like X. Well, you know, I'm sorry. You know, what's the problem?
No, I know. I think you're exactly right. And I think what we've had here is these people going on TV saying, well, a woman has the right to an abortion. There's no such thing as the right to an
abortion.
It was just an opinion of the Supreme Court written 48 years ago, way before all this technology told us what was going on inside a woman's body. I mean, we know more about the internal state of a pregnancy today than we ever did. So we can hear a heartbeat. You can see photos of little babies forming inside their mom. So I'm hoping. Now, there is another point I wanted to make about the Texas abortion law or the challenge by the Biden administration. We'll take a break and then we'll come back to talk about DACA. But what happens if the Biden administration loses for the second time? I mean, what if the court says, no, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to take up your injunction or whatever. That almost puts the abortion law in Texas, I mean, that would almost be like saying, you know, the abortion law is the abortion law in Texas, period. Because, I mean, if the court twice rejects doing something about the law in Texas, I think that's a big risk that the Biden administration is taking, George.
Yeah, and I think they're getting ready. They know that that might happen. Or that they will happen because we have I have seen several articles in the New York Times, in the New Yorker magazine,
mm-hmm.
where they already are saying outrageous things like that the Supreme Court is being too conservatively activist, or that the Supreme Court is antagonistic towards the Biden administration, or that the Supreme Court has outlived its usefulness in its current composition. It's the Supreme Court. It's not the interpretation of the Constitution or the law. It is the Supreme Court that's the problem.
Right. No,
so,
I know. They are crazy. Some of the things they've said about Texas, George, are pretty incredible.
Yeah.
No question about that. I agree with you. Let me take a little break, George, and then when we come back, we'll continue with our conversation, but also get into the other issue of DACA, which is also being appealed by this administration. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend George Rodriguez from from San Antonio. George, the other issue today is that the Biden administration is also going to appeal the ruling, the DACA ruling, from that other judge here in Texas. But the problem is that this is going to go they're going to appeal this, but the next level of appeal just happens to be one of the most conservative courts, the fifth one. I think it's the fifth court, which is extremely conservative. So they may lose on that one, too. In fact, I think they're going to lose in both of these, George.
Yeah, again, the whole foundation of DACA, the whole principle behind it was that Obama wanted to skirt a legislature, a Congress that he knew he could not take, would not side with him, would not take his action. So he acted in an executive manner, which was clearly unlawful, in my opinion, which was clearly something he was not supposed to do. And now that it's being lawfully, that it's being logically looked at, it doesn't have a chance. Doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, I don't see it surviving the appeals court. I really don't. I think that, many of them were hoping that this would go to the Supreme Court, but I don't think it's going to get there. Because I don't think I think the appeals court will basically agree with the lower judge. And that's the end of DACA. Now, some people are still in DACA because I think it covered a particular period of time. So some of the ones who are already in may stay, may get grandfathered, if I could use that word. But definitely there won't be any new ones. It's the end of any new recruits, as I understand it. Well, I'm sure you watched, or you didn't. If you didn't watch, maybe you heard about the fact that President Biden gave a speech yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Did you notice how they must have worked very hard on that speech? Because he looked awfully animated. He almost went out of his way to look angry. Although I will confess, the Afghan speech that he gave the week before, he looked very angry too. And my theory is that he knows that he's down in the polls, and he's trying to pick a fight with Republican governors for the hope of maybe creating excitement on his side of the aisle, the base, as they like to say. But he may have the right, George. You know more about the public sector than I do because you worked in it. He may have the right to tell somebody, let's say, in a particular department, federal department, that he has to be vaccinated. He may have that right. But he doesn't in the private sector. And I think that's where he's going to run into all kinds of problems. The other problem is, I don't know if you saw this, but they've already made an exception for the workers at the Postal Service. So they're saying that workers in the Postal Service, this doesn't apply to them, which is weird. Because what that says is that if I go into a post office, I should be vaccinated, but the people who work there don't have to be vaccinated. So that cannot be. If some of the other labor unions, some of the other public sector unions who represent different kinds of federal workers, they cannot be happy with this kind of selective application of the law, George. You're more familiar with the public sector than I am, but do you think that there will be problems if some people are exempted from the vaccine, George?
Of course. It baffles logic once again. That the fact of the matter is that once you give exception to one group, you're on a slippery slope and you're going to give exceptions to other groups. You're going to have to. So I am not sure what they were thinking or what the idea was to give an exception to one federal employee group while pushing it on another federal. And I'm thinking specifically of the military. They have come down very, very hard on the military, and everybody in the military must do this and must do that. Well, now you're going to let the postal union, postal employees not do this? Where's that logic? But again, it shows that this is strictly a political mm-hmm. game that they're playing.
Yeah.
Now, they scream and yell about we're following the science. What science?
Right.
You don't follow a science by playing politics.
No, but that's a very good point, George. Because if President Biden had asked me for my opinion, I would have said, "Look, Mr. President, give a speech more along the lines of bringing the country together, and say something along the lines of, 'Look, I cannot force you to take the vaccine. and I'm not going to, okay? But I think you should. I think you should take the vaccine because there's evidence that it will make you less vulnerable, let's say, to Delta or whatever is out there. And if, had he come to the speech that way, I think it would have been more successful because it would have shown a president who understands his limitations but understand at the same time feels that you should get vaccinated. But what we got was everybody's going to get vaccinated, and if these Republican governors stand in my way, I'm going to go after them, and I'm, you know, I'm just going to sit there and I guess I'm not going to call him a dictator. That's too strong. But he certainly, I mean, somebody today posted something saying they had never seen an American president talk like that to the public. It was almost like, you stupid fool for not vaccinating, and I'm going to charge you a lot of money. And if you have a company over $100, you're going to have to pay a penalty. I don't know why companies under 100 were exempted. I don't know what the logic for that is either. I mean, there are millions of people who work in companies under 100 employees, so I don't know why they were exempted if you're going to go after the other companies. So anyway, it just seemed to me like the wrong approach, George. I mean, it's like if I wanted you to do something, George, and I called you and said, you know, you got to do this, and if you don't do it, I'm going to throw a rock through your window. Well, how successful am I going to be, George? I don't think very, because, I mean, you would rather have a more logical approach. And he could have done that. He could have given a more logical approach along the lines of, okay, look, you need to be vaccinated for these reasons. Here are my reasons, and please listen to me, and please get vaccinated. Had he done that, I think that would have been a better speech, George.
Yeah, it once again, you know, you get more with honey than you do with, you know, with the others.
Whatever,
and,
yeah.
And that just doesn't seem to enter into the mindset of this administration, of this president. It is threats, it is anger, it is fear that's supposed to motivate us. And, you know, when people are free, when people are still, you know, free to choose, that type of persuasion, that type of approach is not very, very good.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess in Australia they're doing it this way. In Australia they're taking very harsh measures against people. So I don't know how that's working out. I've just seen some reports. But here's another problem too, George. What happens if you tell companies that the employees have to be vaccinated, or the public sector, and X number of employees say, no, I'm not, and I, you know,
yeah,
I'll quit. Well, there are some positions, I was thinking like Secret Service agents or some people at the NSA or the CIA. These are not people you can just replace by putting an ad in the paper. These are very specific trained people that the government needs, or even in the private sector. I mean, you can't just replace a lot of people and certain skills that you have to have in certain types of jobs. And if now all of a sudden these people cannot work because they don't want to be vaccinated for whatever reason, you know, now you've got some kind of an economic aftershock because some of these companies are not going to be able to function properly. I mean, it just seems to me that they didn't think through all the consequences when they gave that speech. I just think they told him, look, you're going down in the polling data. People don't think you're tough. So go out there and look tough, Joe. That's what I think happened, George.
Well, and then there's the other issue, Silvio, the other issue of here they are forcing us to do, you know, the citizens are supposed to be forced and coerced and frightened into complying with vaccinations and with we're supposed to feel bad if we're, you know, if we're I guess spreading the COVID germs, but in the meantime he's not doing anything about the people that are crossing the border, 30% of just the ones that are checked. 30% of the ones that are checked, and that's a small number that are deciding to allow themselves to be checked.
Yeah.
30% of them coming up positive when it comes to COVID. And then once they come up positive with COVID, nothing is being done about them.
Right.
So it rings so hollow for him to threaten American citizens, American workers, and not do anything about the border.
Well, that's the other thing, because apparently the other group that is exempted, not officially exempted, but a de facto exemption, are illegal immigrants who don't have to be checked. In fact, they asked the press secretary today about that, and she didn't have much of an answer, because it is true. The border has been opened without anybody checking anybody's health conditions, which is, I think, to me, insanity in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, that is just crazy. That is just reckless and irresponsible to open a border in the middle of a pandemic, George.
Exactly right. That is exactly right. I mean, you know, it's bad enough that we've got an open border where we're not checking. You know, we don't know exactly who is coming in and what for, but not to know the condition of their health, that's even worse.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, let's wrap it up with a bit of fun information, George. This is a little bit of fun. Jose Feliciano, Light My Fire, Feliz Navidad, two of his biggest hits. He's 76 today, George. So Jose Feliciano is 76 today.
Oh, my God.
I shouldn't be surprised, because it seems like all the rockers are in their 70s now. But Jose Feliciano, I always thought he was a pretty good performer, George.
you have a way to make me feel old.
I know. And I don't do it on purpose, but I'm just, as they say, I'm just presenting the facts, you know. You know, I report, you get old. I say, you and I get old. I mean, don't keep me out of the thing. I mean, I don't think we're too much different. But the one thing I remember about Jose Feliciano, this was probably the most controversial thing he ever did. Maybe you remember this. In the 1968 World Series, he sang the Star Spangled Banner in one of the games. But he sang it with his guitar. I mean, it was well done. It was respectfully done. But it was the first time that the Star Spangled Banner had been sung at a World Series game without either the military background or, you know, the tenor or the soprano, you know, type of voice. He did it in his own way. And it was very controversial, as I recall. Very controversial. It was 1968 World Series. And that became very controversial. And for a long time, Major League Baseball never repeated that. They went back to, you know, the more traditional presentation of the national anthem, which is what I like anyway, honestly. I'd rather have the more traditional approach anyway. But Jose Feliciano, born in New York. And so the next time you hear Feliz Navidad, remember our conversation about Jose Feliciano. I think everybody in my school loved Feliz Navidad because they could learn that song in Spanish in like two lines, because the entire song is two lines. Okay? So everybody could learn that song very quickly. You know, I would write it down for them, and they go, "That's it?" I said, "That's it. Just repeat it over and over and over again." You know, Feliz Navidad, Prospero Año y Felicidad, right? And I would write this down for them, and they were all, everybody was kind of surprised, saying, "Oh, that's all there is?" And I said, "Yes, that's all there is. So you know the song? Just repeat it, repeat it, repeat it." And so that became a very popular song. Maybe that's his biggest song. I don't know. But that's a classic. You hear that all the time at Christmas. It gets saturated after a while, actually.
It's just as classical at this point as White Christmas, I think.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think, it, you know, you hear it all the time on the radio. That song, I think that song goes back a while, too. I'm going to have to check out the date on that song. But, George, let me give you a chance to get back to your life there in San Antonio. As always, thank you so much for joining us. And I think you're going to a high school game tonight. Is that it?
Yes, high school football.
All right. Who's playing?
You know, that's a tradition. That is a Texas tradition.
Absolutely.
We are going to the Reagan Churchill High School game here in San Antonio.
All right. Well, enjoy yourself. I hope your favorite team wins, and we'll
Thank
talk
you.
About it next week. Thank you so much, as always.
You got it. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas talking a little bit about a few things, the Texas abortion law, the DACA appeal, and, of course, the vaccine speech. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a great weekend.